The text we will be starting today is called Dhyana Swarupam. Dhyana means meditation. It's a very ancient word, and they say the word Zen is a derivative of Dhyan. Zen, that is used in the Chinese and Buddhist. So Dhyan is the original word, and Swarupam means the nature. What is the nature of meditation? We'll be doing the first verse, but right now I'm just doing the introduction to the subject. So, what is the nature of meditation? People have different ideas of what is meditation. People have different concepts, and even several teachers of meditation I have found will tell you about the techniques. We'll have different techniques of breathing and, you know, different kinds of techniques. But what are you meditating upon? What is the goal and the purpose of meditation is not very well explained. Even when I started meditation, I really was not clear about what I was meditating upon. And it took me several years before I understood that. So at least you are lucky you have this text which will explain to us what is the nature of meditation. They say right thinking is very important, because as we said, if you do not have a clear idea of what you are meditating upon, then you will either get sidetracked or you will waste your time. It will help. I'm not saying, even if you sit with the idea that I want to reach God, I want to reach myself, I want to reach peace, that itself is good. There's nothing wrong, even if the technique is not good, or even if you don't have the goal or purpose. There's just the fact that you're sitting with your eyes closed with a noble goal in mind is wonderful. So there's nothing wrong with that. But the benefit is a lot more if you follow the right technique. It's like you want to go from here to Los Angeles. You know, you could go towards Tehachapi and then go towards Lancaster and then get lost and then somehow get back onto 14 and then somehow make to 5. You know, roundabout way you will ultimately reach. But if you have a GPS or if you have a right guide who tells you, okay, get on 99.5 straight, you are there, then you don't waste as much time. You get where you want to get. So that is why right thinking is very important. Right knowledge is very important. There are three kinds of thinking that have been described. One is the diffuse thinking, where your mind runs from topic to topic. It's like you're sitting and chanting Om, and then from Om you start thinking of home. And then my house, you know, I have had this repair done. And that mechanic, you know, who came to do that, he didn't do a good job. He took the money and he just, you know, didn't even do the job. And then you think about the race of the mechanic. You know, all of those guys of that race are all the same. So, you know, where were you thinking of Om, and now suddenly you are in the new elections, you know, 2016. That is called diffuse thinking, where your mind just runs uselessly from topic to topic. Then is the casual thinking, where, you know, you're walking, you see a flower, okay, then you see a bird, then you see a car. You don't pay any particular attention. You're just, you know, your mind is somewhere else, and, you know, so that's called casual, where you're not paying any attention to what somebody passes by and says, you know, I waved to you, you didn't even, you know, wave back to me. I didn't even see you. Why? Because your mind was not focused. So that is called casual thinking. What we are looking for is focused thinking, when you are focused on a particular subject. And that is how one should do everything. That's why the masters tell us, do one thing at a time. Do not be driving and talking on the cell phone. I'm one of the main culprits of that, so please. I use the hands-free, but, you know, as a physician, we have to answer our phones all the time. Or do not be eating and drinking while you're watching TV. You know, so focus on one thing at a time, because focus is how you can achieve results. Like they say, sunlight, which is diffuse, and it falls on a black paper, nothing happens to it. But if you take a magnifying, you know, the convex lens, and you put it there, and that sunlight is focused by that lens upon one spot on the black paper, it burns. Why? Because the focused energy is the one that achieves the results. So in meditation, we try to focus our energy on the goal. And that is the main purpose. So we don't do diffused thinking. We don't do casual thinking. But it should be focused thinking. Then Swarupam means also means my own nature. Dhyana means meditation. Swarupam means the nature. Swarupam also means my own nature. So meditating on my own nature. That is another meaning of translation of this word. Dhyana Swarupam is meditating upon my own nature. And what is my nature? Who am I? Of course, we have talked about that many times in this class. But the fact is that we love ourselves the most, as even it's covered in the text. I love myself. And to preserve myself, I do anything. You know, I know people, here at least people have insurance, but in India, I know people when they're diagnosed with cancer, they will sell their house, they will sell their land, and they become completely poor. Why? Because chemotherapy is so expensive. So even if they know it's terminal cancer, and even here we find somebody knows he has terminal cancer, but he will say, no, I'm not happy with the doctors in Bakersfield. I'm going to go to, you know, LA, UCLA, or I'm going to go to Mayo Clinic, or I'm going to go to MD Anderson. Even though all the doctors, and I have had patients like that who will run from center to center, you know, when they have been told clearly that it is end stage. Why? Because I do not want to die. I want to preserve myself at all costs. Or if we are not happy with that, we'll go to alternative. Okay, I'm going to, you know, go to Ayurveda, or I'm going to go to homeopathy. So I love myself the most. And we find that we spend countless hours in front of the mirror and, you know, beautifying ourselves and then, you know, buying expensive clothes and jewelry and getting plastic surgery. This reminds me of a story. This lady died and was sent to heaven. Was sent to St. Peter, and God was there in St. Peter, and they said, sorry, you know, there was a computer glitch. You are not supposed to die. You are supposed to live another 10 or 15 years, so we send you back to earth. So she's very happy. I got another 10, 15 years. That's wonderful. So she goes back to earth, and she's so happy that she got a new life. So she goes and gets herself plastic surgery done. Every part of her body fixed, gets makeup, hair colored, all, you know, everything of herself. She beautifies, new clothes, new everything. And she comes out of the beauty parlor and after the plastic surgery looking gorgeous, you know, perfect. And suddenly a truck comes and hits her and she dies. And she goes up to St. Peter and she's mad. And she says, you know what? You told me I had 10 or 15 years to live. How come I'm back here? St. Peter says, I didn't recognize you. So we do anything and everything to beautify ourselves, and we, you know, love our own. Anytime there's a group picture in your class reunion, there's 100 people, you look, where am I? Isn't that every, I also do, which am I? Why? Because I want to know myself. I want to see myself. So we love ourselves the most. But the problem is that we don't know who we are. And that is where the problem arises, that I don't really know who I am. And I think I am this body, because from childhood we have been told, you are this body. And not only this, from childhood, from the time I was a protozoa and collecting little, you know, wandering from one, you know, in the water and then became a fish and an animal and all the evolution, I always thought I was this body. And so this is so powerful in us that sooner or later it leads to sorrow. Because when I am this body, the body is meant to perish. It's going to get old, it's going to get weak, it's going to get arthritis, it's going to get back pain, you know, all those heart problems, lung problems, can't breathe, you know, digestive system, nothing works. So it leads to sorrow. But the scriptures tell us that I am not this body, but I am the Supreme Self, what we have indicated as Om. That is my true nature. You are that Supreme Self. You are that Spirit who at this moment is occupying this body. As I have said before, I am not the body. Say, suppose when you are meditating or when you are in the church or a temple and your mind is very peaceful, You say, I am this human being and I'm enjoying the spiritual experience. You know, we always say that I am a human being and I'm enjoying this beautiful spiritual experience. We say, no, you should say, I am a spirit who is enjoying this human experience. I am that Holy Spirit. I am that consciousness. That's why Jesus says the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. I am that spirit. I am that consciousness who is at this moment enjoying a human experience or suffering. Whether I'm enjoying or suffering, it's the body that is enjoying or suffering. But I am not, because I am the spirit. I am that consciousness. And so what that does is takes you beyond sorrow, because nothing can affect the spirit. The body can be burnt, the body can be cut, the body can be hurt. The mind can be insulted or can be, you know, praised or can have joys or sorrows, have success or failure. But the spirit is all unaffected through all the life's vagaries. You know, life may throw all kinds of problems, all kinds of sorrows, but they don't affect me. And what that does, it is not that it makes you a stone or a rock, it makes you strong and be like a surfer. A surfer, if you see that, is surfing, and the bigger the waves, the more he enjoys or she enjoys. And the biggest waves come and the surfer with the surfboard is able to rise above that. And then no matter the biggest or the smallest waves cannot drown the surfer. So similarly, here we say that what is the surfboard in our life? It is God's name or this right knowledge that I am the spirit. Once you have that with you, the right knowledge, and once you have God's name with you, then that is the surfboard which will carry you through all joys and sorrows of life. They are like the waves. They may rise and fall, but you won't drown, but you'll be able to face life's challenges. And the bigger the wave, the more you enjoy. So the bigger the problem, the more this person enjoys facing it. Why? Because she has the right knowledge that I am that spirit. And she has the Lord's name. That's why they say chanting God's name gives you so much strength and power that no matter what kind of problems come, even if you're diagnosed with cancer and the doctor says you have 3 months to live, if I have all lived my life as a very good person, if I have remembered God, then even those 3 months, I say it's okay. I have lived my life. Now I'm going to go meet Jesus. What's wrong with that? Everybody is destined to die. And at least I know when I'm going to die. So that strength comes once you have this right knowledge. So that's why they say that always remember that you are not this body. You are the spirit. You are that divine presence. And the second part of that is that the self in me is the self in all. Just as I am a divine soul, each and every one is. Everyone is that one divinity. We are all one. That is why our knowledge is called Advaita. Dvaita means two. Advaita means not two. There is only one. So everything is that one. This building is that consciousness. The bottle, the pointer, the table, the girl, the man. Everybody is that one. Just as when there is a part, there are small parts, big parts, yellow, green, blue parts. They are all nothing but mud. From one big pile of mud, the pot maker made all different pots and cups and plates and saucers. And he knows that all these plates and cups and saucers are nothing but mud and mud alone. So the potter knows that all these pots are nothing but mud in different shapes and forms, but they're all mud. A goldsmith has a bar of gold and makes a necklace and a bracelet and a ring and a earring and all those things. But inside he knows that they are all nothing but gold and gold alone. Not only that, but from the necklace, if you remove the gold, you say, okay, I want to remove the goldsmith says, I'll remove the gold and give you the necklace. You say, what are you talking? You know, if you remove the gold from the necklace, nothing remains. From the pot, you say, I'll remove the clay and leave the pot nothing. So the cause appears as the effect in all different forms. So effect is nothing but cause appearing in different shapes and forms. All effects are from that one cause, just as all parts are from that one mud, all ornaments are from that one gold. So similarly, when the world, before the world was created, God alone was. So he is the cause. He alone was. As the, not as a limited, as a form, as a father in heaven or as Shiva or Krishna, but that total consciousness, Brahman, the all-pervading reality, who pervades this whole universe. Everything, so he alone or she alone, actually it is it. In Sanskrit, they use the word neuter. They describe God as it. It means it's neither male nor female, doesn't have a form, doesn't have a shape, doesn't have a color, doesn't have a description. Then why do we have different forms? We'll be talking about that as the text goes on. But different forms are meant for us to love, to focus on. But the form should lead us to the formless. And we'll talk more about that in the later class. So just as all parts are nothing but mud, so when the whole universe emerged from that one, then we are all, what are we? We are all that divinity. Not only that, but everyone, all birds, all animals, all plants, all fish, even inanimate objects, that's why they say even your inanimate objects should be respected. Your shoes should not be thrown, the car, your table, your chair, your books, your clothes. Everything should be respected. Why? Because they are all that divinity. Everything is nothing but that one God. And when everything is nothing but that one God, then how can I hate anybody? Because they are all me. I alone am in all. Everything is me and me alone. Just as I love my hand and my face and my eyes and my ears, I love all equally. We have talked about that a couple of weeks ago. So similarly, I cannot love God and then hate another person. Because if I do, then that person has divinity as much as my brother or my family member and a neighbor or the person across the street. Everything is a manifestation of that divinity. So when I see the self in me as the self of all, then I develop spontaneous love and spontaneous identification. That's why the saints could do that. The saints could love everyone. But you and I have a problem because we are so identified with our body. Not only that, but all our relationships are also with the body level. Whether it's our spouse or our child or our house or our car or our money or job, title, everything is related to the body. Why do I love my spouse? Because he or she can take care of my needs. You know, my physical needs and my emotional needs. I have certain requirements, and once that person cannot, then what do? I go to the nearest lawyer. I remember my secretary, it's so interesting. This was a few years back, and she said, oh, I'm going to divorce my husband. So I said, well, what happened to you? Does he beat you? No. Does he not provide financially? No, he provides financially. Does he take care of your children? Yes. Does he spend time with you? Yes. Why do you want to divorce him? He doesn't do it for me. There's no spark. There's no excitement. So just no excitement. So she's been married 8-10 years, has 2-3 children. But just why? Because he cannot satisfy my whatever the excitement I have. So for little things, we... Why? Because our identification with this body is so strong. And it's the same thing, you know, with the children. You know, the children, because they will take care of me when I get old. So therefore, I take care of the children, and we have all these expectations. Our whole life we spend, as I said, in beautifying ourselves, in buying clothes and jewelry and spending so much time and money. Why? To beautify this body, because I am this body. Then acquiring wealth and acquiring a home. We're not saying that one should not have clothes or jewelry or home. But if you're going to spend your whole life acquiring things for this body, new cars, you know, your car is fine, but 2-year-old model, I want to get a new one. Phone, you know, is working fine, but no, I want the latest iPhone. I want i6, 6 plus. So constantly acquiring, possessing, and wanting more and more. I must have more money, more power, more this, more that. Why? Because that's why these people are called asuras in Hindi. Asura means the demons. Why? Because they have so strong identification with this body, that I am this body, that they will do anything even kill another body to preserve their own body, even spend all their life savings to preserve themselves. And that comes from wrong understanding. As long as you understand you are this body, you will do anything to preserve it. But for a wise person who understands that I am that spirit, then when it comes time to drop, it's not that if he gets sick, he won't go to the doctor. We are not saying that. You take care of the body, you exercise, you eat healthy, you go to the doctor, take the medicine, do whatever is required. But when ultimately it comes time to drop the body and somebody says, you know, you have terminal cancer, you have 3 months to live, you say, okay, time to go, that's fine, I can drop the body. So that understanding that I am not this body is what we try to meditate upon. The last point, I was hoping to do the first verse, but the introduction took so long. So we'll maybe do the first verse next week, is what are the three steps in studying? How do we study? So in the text also it is mentioned, you can read that at home later on, but there are three steps. One is to listen. Listen means you can listen to a teacher or you can read it in the book, but whatever, through eyes, through ears, however I acquire this knowledge, so that is called listening. Listening, reading, they all come in the same category as the sense organs giving me information. And that is required to remove ignorance. Because unless I know what something is, I won't be able to identify it. Say, suppose I went to Australia and I had never been told there is an animal called kangaroo. I had never heard about it. And then suddenly I go to Australia and I see this, you know, creature hopping around on two legs with a pouch and two small legs in the pouch. So what is this? And somebody, and it's an aborigine who speaks in the aboriginal language, and he'll use the aboriginal language and say what it is. And then next time you go to somebody else and he'll say in English, this is kangaroo. But I had never heard the word kangaroo. I had never been described it. So somebody, a teacher, had to tell me that this is a kangaroo. This is what it looks like. This is what it does. So the first step is to remove ignorance. I could have read about kangaroo maybe in a book or on the internet, or I could have been told by a person. So similarly, this knowledge about who I am can be listened to from a teacher or can be read from a book. So that is the first step. Then they say, contemplate upon this knowledge. Because what happens is that I know, I have been told I am the spirit. I am not this body. Okay, you have been told that. But when you start, you walk out, I am the spirit, everything is fine. And you go out on the street and then somebody cuts you off or somebody honks at you, you know, because you don't move fast enough in the red light, and immediately your anger comes and you forget about I am the spirit and he is the spirit, and you show him a finger and you get mad or you get irritated, and then your whole drive home is ruined. He said, I was in such a good mood and meditation and this guy had to come and ruin it. So we are not able to, the doubts come. Am I really the spirit? You know, it's said in the books, it's easy for the authors to say that. They don't have to deal with traffic every day like I have to deal with. So doubts come, so then you go home and contemplate, you know, who am I? Am I really this body? They say, no, this body is changing. Like I remember when I was 5 or 6 years old, what I used to do when I first went to school, then I became a young woman or a man, and then I became middle-aged, and I remember all that. So the body has changed, my emotions have changed, my ideas have changed, my desires have changed. My ego, self-identification has also constantly changed. But there is one constant, I, that spirit, which was there the same as when I was 5 years old, as I am now. So when you contemplate upon that, you say, yeah, the teacher is right. There is one I that is not changing, that is constantly present. In this ever-changing world of objects, emotions, and thoughts, that never changes. So then by contemplation, it strengthens your knowledge and removes your doubts. And then the third is, then you meditate upon it. You contemplate and then you abide in that knowledge. Meditation does not only mean for 2 hours or half an hour or 20 minutes, but meditation is constant abidance in that knowledge, which we'll talk a little more in detail next week. but constant abidance in that knowledge where it never leaves me, that understanding never leaves me, that consciousness alone is everything, and that consciousness I am. So that alone is real. And so that I, that little I, disappears. There is no I, there is only that. That understanding comes in with meditation. So this is in brief an introduction to what is the nature of meditation and what is my true nature. So Swarupam means the nature of meditation. Swarupam also means Swarupam, my nature, who I really am. So we'll end here, and I welcome any comments, any questions. The next week, we'll do the first verse and then maybe the second verse if we have time. Yes.
Sometimes people's behavior doesn't indicate that they really love themselves. Do you think that's a relative term?
You mean when they commit suicide?
Well, not even suicide, but just how they treat themselves and then they treat others and they're just...
No, they're treating others because they don't see the self in all. You know, they think that I am this body, mm-hmm. and therefore I hate this person because he's not me or she's not me.
But I mean, they don't even love themselves. But it's more of a basic love for yourself.
Yeah, basic love. Yeah. The basic love for who you are. Yeah, there are some people, for example, like, say, somebody who commits suicide or is on a self-destructive behavior, you know, mm-hmm. continues to drink and continues to smoke even if the doctor told them, or they commit suicide. They say suicide is the highest form of self-love because he's so fed up with this life. But he says, if I die, then maybe I'll go to heaven and be happy. Or if you're a Hindu, you say, maybe I'll be born in a better life and I'll be happy. So I'm tired of this unhappiness. So that is the ultimate act where they say, by destroying this body, maybe I'll get a better life or a better body. So that also is a way of trying to escape from this sorrow. That also is a form of self-love, an extreme form of self-love, where I do not want anymore to subject myself to that. I want to be in a happier place.
I want to be judgmental on their behalf, but I can tell that they're not one with themselves as I am with mine.
True.
And I feel for them.
I think by giving them this knowledge, if they're willing to listen, you can talk to them, share with them this knowledge. You give them a book or something, some advice, so to tell them that. But the person has to be willing to listen. To knowledge, yeah. Otherwise, you cannot drag a person, you know. You can tell them about it.
But the meditation would be listening.
Right.
For God to express that to me.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think, yeah, we have talked about it.
Maybe
in this class. Yeah, in prayer, I talk to God. In meditation, God talks to me. So, because it is good to pray, there is nothing wrong, and will be addressed in one of the later classes, what is the nature of prayer. But in prayer, I see God as a particular form or as the formless, and I go there and ask for help, which is good. But there are two problems, you know, with that. I mean, one is prayer, I just pray because I love God, and I say, God, I love you, and I want you in my life, and that's good. But when you pray to God as an ATM, you know, I want this, God, I want this, this, this. We give him a list of 9 things. And out of 9, he only gave me 8. Then we say, what happened to the 9th? You know, then, so we only love God when he gives us things. When I don't get what I want, then I say, forget it. What kind of God is this? You know, maybe I'll go to the next church, you know, because the father said that you come here and you'll get what you want. So then the love becomes just as an asking, as a beggary. So prayer is to talk to God out of love. Just as when if you know somebody whom you love and your child, say, and they call you, you don't mind talking to them 20 minutes or half an hour, especially if they've gone away to college. And if they call you, which happens very rarely, maybe once in 6 months. But if they do call, you're so happy, you know, you want to talk to them out of love. So talk to God out of love. I love God and I love to be in his presence or her presence if you love the mother goddess. So that is prayer. In meditation, when your mind is completely quiet, then knowledge dawns from within. God's presence within as consciousness, then that speaks to you and it reveals itself to you. So in your silence, in the meditation, you experience that inner joy, that inner bliss, that inner... And they say God reveals himself to you in your silence. So that is called when God speaks to you. Yes.